Well, welcome back, everybody. Hello again. This is Vox Pop. I'm Alan Chartok, in for Ray Graff today. Today we want to hear your incredible stories of heroism, a topic that comes on a somber note as the debate over the New York Post decision to run a front-page photo of a New York City man moments before being struck by a subway train continues. A lot of people have criticized that man and said, hey, maybe it would have been better to help than to shoot the pictures. While reporting on the convoluted case also continues this week, we're asking you to call in and tell us of a time when you or someone you know were faced with the opportunity to be a hero to themselves or others and how that situation played out in your life. So, we already got two people on the phone with some remarkable stories. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Or tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. You can also leave your questions and comments on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WAMCRadio. Again, facebook.com/WAMC radio. All right, we're ready to go. Tell us your stories. If you want to check in on whether the photographer should have, whether the Post should have played that picture, whether the photographer should have been taking the picture, that's okay too. But I'm real interested in stories of heroism that you've seen. Let's go to Katie and Rhinebeck. Katie, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hey. Ellen. Hi. Nice to talk to you.
And to you, Katie.
You are a hero of mine.
Whoa. Go ahead.
Anyhow, I live in Rhinebeck, yes. And people on this side of the river do a lot of shopping in Kingston.
Right.
And anybody who's done that Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge knows that when you come out of the toll booth in Kingston,
yep,
there's a little bit of a rush to get, you know, in that one lane that takes you over the bridge.
Because there are two places you can come in, right? Is that what it is?
There's like two or three sometimes.
Yeah.
So there's this weird space where you have to, you know, have good manners, I guess. And so this was a couple of years ago in the summer, but I was, you know, jostling for position, and some guy in a SUV comes blasting past me, and I was like, oh, my God, you know. So we're going up over the bridge, and it's a long bridge, and you're going up, 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 and all of a sudden I saw a car parked at the side of the road at the top of the bridge, and I thought, oh, that's kind of weird, and then I saw a woman climbing over the edge of the railing.
Yeah.
And this man in the SUV whipped over to the side, jumped out, grabbed her. And, of course, I'm driving. I have to go past this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking in my head, if I was in front of him, what would I have done? Would I have had the wherewithal to stop and do this? And so I kind of tried to research the story, like wanted to let this guy know that, you know, he was such a hero. And I never found out who he was or, you know, what the outcome of the story was. But I do believe he saved her life. And, you know, 30 seconds after sort of cursing him for cutting in front of me, I was like, boy, what would I have done in that situation?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the thing we're trying to get at here. You are so perceptive, Katie, because people have an opportunity and they have to do it within a split second.
Absolutely,
To do it. Well, it's a wonderful story. Thank you, Katie. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, if he's out there, you know, thank you, because you saved me from either just driving past or I don't know what.
Right. Maybe he'll call in. Thanks, Katie. Appreciate
it. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll go to Lily in Albany, but not before I say 1-800-348-2551. Go, Lily. You're on.
Hi. I'm also a fan. And I just wanted to tell you my story.
Great.
This is back in Texas. I heard a woman screaming, and I looked out my back window. I was in an upstairs apartment, and I saw a man. This is across my backyard and across their backyard.
Yep.
And a man was dragging a woman out of a car and dragging her up at the outside stairs to an upstairs apartment. And
when you say dragging, what do you mean by dragging?
By the hair.
Oh, boy.
Dragging.
Yeah.
Physically dragging her. And she was, I mean, you could tell it wasn't a fight. It was a life and death struggle.
Wow.
I mean, she was crying and screaming and trying to hold on to the outside stairs to not go up.
Wow.
Up into that apartment. And so what I did is, I know that when you want to project your voice, you have to lower it So I didn't scream. I shouted. And I, and in an angry tone, and I said, "You better let go of her. Let go of her right now.
Great, great.
You better get out of here." So he looked around, and at that moment, a neighbor was going out to her car, and she yelled, "Y'all better stop yelling, or I'm going to call the police."
And then, yelling at you.
Yes. And so, again, really low, like I was really angry and I really meant it. I said, "And I already called the cops, so you better let her go." I hadn't called the cops yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So right away, I got on 911, and I called police, and they came, and I guess they arrested him.
You don't know how it turned out, though. But,
well, she was saved. I was scared to death what would happen to her once she got into there. Obviously, she was too. And so that's what happened.
Well, Lily, that's a wonderful story. You're a hero. I mean it. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. Believe it or not, there's two free phones. Okay, let's go to Patrick in Troy. Patrick, you're on.
Hello, Alan.
Hey, Patrick.
Yes, I can honestly say that I saved someone from saved someone's life.
Wow.
Saved someone from burning up in his car.
Great.
Thanksgiving morning, 1985. Wee small hours of the morning, I was out delivering newspapers and came upon a car that was upside down, had hit a telephone pole. The telephone pole was across the belly of the car because the car was belly up.
Wow.
And it was on fire, and there were people running around trying to, you know, raise some attention from neighbors and all that. But everybody was fast asleep, I guess. So finally, I mean, there were wires down, there were flames, but in fact, the wires weren't on the car. Oh, and he was stuck in his car. He didn't know what had happened. He was pretty drunk, and he was caught in his... seatbelt, his weight, you know, being upside down, his weight was against the latch, the buckle of the seatbelt. So I tried to get it off. It was difficult.
How did you get the door open?
I just pulled on it, and it scraped across the pavement, and I survived that. So I thought, well, I'm not electrocuted yet. So I ended up, but to get his seatbelt off, I ended up actually crawling in. It was a small car, like an old Mustang.
Wow.
And I crawled around the back of his seat, groped around in the dark for the seatbelt, found the latch, had a hard time pushing it in, but then pushed as hard as I could because I didn't want to spend a lot of time in there. And I felt it release. I felt him kind of thump down against the roof of the car, again, upside down. And by then, the other people saw that it was safe enough to handle, so we all got him out of the car. And I think he had a broken arm. But that was it. Got him out of the car and kind of drove away. The police and the fire department finally came and put the fire out. By then, it was really, really on fire. And ended up getting the Good Citizens Award from the town of Colony for my efforts.
Good for you.
But I have no idea who that man was or is or was. I never heard from him. I never heard from anybody. I don't even know who the guy is.
This is in common, you know, that people don't know the resolution of their actions after you hear these stories, and nobody knows how they came out.
That's what struck me, the first two callers.
Yeah.
The anonymity of it, you know? It's funny. I thought, you know, eventually or somewhere along the way, I would hear from somebody with a thank you or a Christmas card or something. But it never happened.
I knew a woman who I taught with once who told me that she saw a guy gasping for air on the side of the road. She pulled over. She realized he was in cardiac arrest.
Wow.
She gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Now, I'm just telling you the story like she told me.
Sure.
I'm not passing comment on any of this.
Sure.
She told me that the guy, that she left her name when the ambulance came, and that some money had been put in her account.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still waiting.
Right.
And it was a long time ago.
Patrick, it's a great story. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, right.
Be well. Have a good holiday.
Yeah. Let's go to John in West Stockbridge. Hiya, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Alan. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, great to hear your voice.
Too. So my story is when I was a boy, really, I was about 14 years old. I lived way up on the Canadian border in New York State,
right.
And I had sort of a rough upbringing, and I had been out for the night sleeping in the woods, and I had been drinking and using drugs with some friends, sort of nefariously. And I was riding my bicycle home to get some food, and I was a little messed up, and I found a baby in the middle of the road.
No.
Yeah. And I was confused. I wasn't sure if I was hallucinating or not.
In the middle of the road?
In the middle of the road.
Where somebody could have run over the baby.
In the middle of the road. It was early in the morning, and I put my bicycle down, and I pondered for a few minutes what to do in my sort of confused state. And I decided, and I was a boy, I decided the best thing to do was to go knock on the trailer door next door, figuring the baby had escaped. And sure enough, a woman came out of the door, walked over, got the baby, and closed the door in my face. Did not say a word.
Ah.
And that was that.
So you saved the baby, and some, you know, and it certainly is possible the baby hadn't, quote, escaped, but had been put there.
Well, I don't know. I do know that in terms of resolution, I do know that later, probably 10 or 15 years later, that baby committed suicide when he became a young man.
Oh, my God. Hey, John, what a story. Okay, we're going to have to
I hope others are better, but I did want to share that. Bye-bye.
That's quite a story. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Yep. 1-800-348-2551. There's one free phone. Linda and Patty and Nate and Pavel, stay where you are. And we'll be right back. We're going to take a short break.
Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Rhinebeck Artists Shops in Rhinebeck and New Paltz, featuring holiday gifts, stocking stuffers, picture framing, and fine art materials for students, professionals, and the public for over 30 years. RhinebeckArt.com. St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, a private elementary school offering full-day academic programs to kindergarten and first-grade students. StGeorgeCP.org. And New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years. NYSBA.org/lawyer-referral.
And we are back on the Vox Pop. You know, you can do a number of things. You can call us at 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. You can also leave your comments and questions on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Let's go to Linda in Newberry. Okay, Linda, I can't wait to hear this one. Go ahead.
Well, Alan, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm here in Newburgh, and I'm going to provide a little comedy relief to the hero stories. We were on a boat at the 79th Street Boat Basin.
I know
docking.
It well. I know it well.
Yes, docking next to the Clearwater, which was exciting.
Wow.
Somehow, my boat shoe fell off and landed on its sole on the water, and the current was taking it to Newburgh.
Now, what is it? Wait a second. What's a boat shoe again?
A shoe, just an open shoe with no ties.
I see.
And somehow it slipped off.
Right.
It fell in the water. It landed like a shoe would just be sitting there, and it was now a little boat, and the current was taking it north.
Like?
If it were going home.
Like who? Like Tuffy. Remember Tuffy, the little tugboat that got put in the ocean and went down to the sea? Okay, Linda, go ahead.
Okay, so we used our boat hook and our net and tried to catch it and just missed it. And I tossed the hook to the guy on the Clearwater who leaned out on the bowsprit. Great action, and missed. The shoe was moving faster. And I was saying to myself, what am I going to do with one shoe and blah, 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 when we heard putt, 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 putt. And a gentleman who had just docked his dinghy went out in the water, picked up my shoe, and came back. And as he walked toward me, I said, oh, you are my hero. I am so excited. How can I thank you? And he said, all my life, I have want to be hero.
Oh,
you have made me hero.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, great. Great. Linda, it is a great story. And, you know, there's a whole range of these stories, ranging from saving somebody's life to any of the other stuff, like saving a shoe. But that shoe had parents, too. Thank you, Linda. Appreciate the call. Okay.
All righty. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. And so let's go to Patty in Dutchess County. Patty, you're on.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
Well, you know.
Hanging in there?
Yep. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Patty.
Well, you know, I was listening to the beginning of your broadcast today about the pictures of, you know, what happened in New York City the other day on the subway. I used to ride the trains a lot.
Yep.
And I know how frightening that whole situation is, and I'm just so against that picture. And it made me think, you know what, I'm going to call, because years ago, my husband and I were traveling on a country road in Westchester County, near a reservoir, and that was very wooded, beautiful area. And I was a passenger, and I look to my right, and I see this woman running in the woods. And I, you know, what looked like she was pulling her pants up, and then shortly behind her was a man doing the same thing, and she was screaming, "Help, help!" And I said to my husband, "Stop the car, stop the car." And I got out of the car, and I said, "Ma'am, are you in trouble?" And she came running to us, got into the car, and said, "Take me home, take me home." And I knew she was trembling, and I guess this man had tried to attack her. He didn't succeed, thankfully. Anyway, we brought her home, got her settled into her house, you know, called the police for her, and then we went home. And a couple days later, a police officer came to my house, you know, asking for a report. And then she had also sent us a beautiful bouquet of flowers with a thank you, which was not necessary, but it just made us feel so good to have helped her, you know? And since then in my life, there has been other occasions where I have been put in a situation where I was needed and I didn't think twice. You know, it makes you feel so good. You don't think about anything else.
And think of all the people who have those opportunities who don't take them.
Yeah.
Well, that's extraordinary story, Patty. And you did find out, you know, you did hear from the person you saved, which is different from a lot of the other people. You know, God bless you. I think that's terrific. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Great story, Patty. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You have a great day.
You
bye-bye.
Too. And let's go to, oh, boy. I think that's number two. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Nate in Lake Ontario. Is that you, Nate?
Yeah,
you there?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was out on the lake, and I had picked up somebody on an island, someone that was coincidentally with a story, he was stranded. So I picked him up, and we're coming back to the mainland, and we see all this debris off of this uninhabited, like, smaller island. And we're looking around, and it's dark, and it's really stormy, and we see there's people in the water swimming towards, so we try to help. My boat ends up hitting a rock and ripping off the bottom half of the engine. So now I'm stranded with these people on this island. And they're soaking wet. It's just in the very beginning of April. So they're shivering. There's women there, and they're freezing cold. So me and my friend, we get a fire started. We stay there the whole night and figure out a way to, you know, make a couple oars, because they didn't have any oars. I didn't have any in my boat. We had found a duck blind and constructed oars out of it. And once day broke, we paddled the shore and were able to get help for the rest of the people on the island.
And what happened to the first boat?
The first boat had you know, come really close to that island and not only, you know, knocked their engine off, but they had punctured their hull. And the boat sank. So luckily, they had the wherewithal to swim kind of, you know, near the island. And that's where we found them. You know, we saw this debris in the water, and were able to kind of start helping them. But as in the process of helping them, we disabled our vessel.
Yeah.
So here we all are, stuck on this island, freezing cold. We were dry. They were cold. And we were able to get a fire going and kind of get them, because they were pretty disoriented and out of it. And like I said, it was very, very cold out, and they were wet. So we were able to get a fire going and get us off the island alive.
Nate, did you ever hear from them after that?
Yeah, you know what? I still keep in touch with them. I'd like to say they're living a safer lifestyle now, but maybe it happening twice will teach him a lesson.
Hey, Nate. Nate, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Let's go to Pavel in Woodstock. Pavel?
Yes, speaking.
Yeah, you're on. Go ahead.
I was in Soviet Army, and they were building houses for officers. And one rainy day, some guys complained that the hook of the crane was under power.
Uh-huh.
And one guy grabbed this hook. He was trying to, he didn't know. He tried to hook it to something to bring cement up. And he screamed, light, and he went down on his back. And his hands were attached to this hook. I realized what happened. I jumped to him, grabbed his clothes, trying to pull him out from the hook. But it stuck. It hit me. Then I don't know how, but I figured out, and I swing my arm and hit the hook. I flew about a couple meters behind the hook and landed on a pile of brick. But the hands of this guy went down, and hook was all over him, but he was saved. I'm saying in the American Army, probably I would be had something like Purple Heart saving his life. But in Soviet Army, nobody really thanked me. Even this guy never thanked me because I am a Jew and he was anti-Semite. I still don't know why I decided to save this guy. I hated him and he hated me.
That's a very interesting story. So you started you knew the guy, you didn't like him, but when the moment came, you saved him.
Exactly.
And he never thanked you after that.
Nobody thanked me except my squad commander. On one of the meetings, he said, "You got to behave like Sergeant Gurevich because he saved life of another man."
Well, what do you make of the whole thing?
Well, it's normal. That's why I went to the United States. Because I never was appreciated anywhere.
What are you doing in the U.S. now, Pavel?
Right now I'm retired, but I used to be a software engineer for many years.
Interesting. Well, Pavel, I want to thank you for sharing that remarkable story with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, let's go to Chris in Stormville. Chris, you're on.
Oh, hi, Alan. How are you?
Hey.
Good. I'm a firefighter, and one of the things that really struck me, and it struck a lot of the firefighters that I know, is that nobody jumped to action with the gentleman who was pushed off of the subway. I'm sorry?
No, you're right. And there was a story not that long ago about somebody who did risk his own life. Remember that whole thing? And grabbed the guy, jumped down into the thing. The train was coming, pushed him up, got up, and the other people helped him. And this is a very different story.
It is. And one of the things that I think really happens in life, with us as firefighters, we don't think about whether we should. We just do. And the reason that we do that is because we're trained for it. Whereas the average person probably standing on the platform, if they're not a police officer or active military or a firefighter, is going to go through a paralysis of should I not? What I would like to advocate is that in phys ed, starting in elementary, they start teaching kids some basic rescue. Simple things, just at least so that when they get older, they are predisposed to action rather than being predisposed to standing like frightened sheep.
And don't you think, Chris, that it comes down to basic character? You know, you either have it or you don't.
Well, it does and it doesn't. I think that part of the reason that I know I have acted in the past and do what I do is because I'm trained for it. I don't have to ask myself, oh my gosh, what should I do?
You don't have an internal debate. What have you done in the past? Share one story with us.
Firefighting, extrication, automobile accidents, rescued a cat.
and you went up in the tree and got the cat?
No, actually the cat was in the fire. We got the cat. We got the cat out, administered oxygen. We worked together as a team. That's probably one of the things is that firefighters don't think in terms of I am a hero.
Yeah.
They would deny. We just don't. It's not something that we think about.
Yeah.
We're not a badge that we want hung on us because we just say, well, we're doing what we're really trained to do.
Yeah. Well, Chris, that's a great commentary on all of us, both character in terms of preparation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really, I'm sorry?
I just was going to say I appreciate your call very much.
Oh, thank you very much. I hope they start teaching it in elementary school and on up through as a phys ed, part of phys ed.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
We'll go to, I'll just give you the number. There's one free phone, 1-800-323-9262. We're talking about stories of heroism. Have you ever been involved in one? Have you ever seen one? Let's go to Erin in Slingerlands. Okay, Erin.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Well, pretty good. Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. This story is about my daughter, who is 18 now, and she was 16 at the time.
Wow.
She was on the cross-country team for the local high school, and they were at practice after school one day around, you know, weather like this sort of. It's a fall sport. So they were out running in a wooded area where near the high school, but it was far enough away that there weren't a lot of people. And one of the girls started coughing and stopped running. So the other girls kept running, and my daughter stopped and said, "Are you okay?" And the girl said, "Gee, my throat is really scratchy, and I just don't feel right." And so my daughter looked at the friend, and she looked like she had a rash or something on her face, kind of like hives, it turned out to be. And so she said, "Well, let's head back towards school." My daughter said to the friend, "Let's head back. You know, we can jog it back. We won't go real fast or anything." And as they were leaving, you know, running along the path, the girl said, I'm having trouble breathing. And my daughter noticed that the girl's lips were swollen and her fingers were swelling. So she said, why don't you take off your rings? Because I think your rings are getting, you know, tight on your hand. So she took off the rings. Neither of them had a cell phone because this was practice. And as they went along, the girl started to get weak and really couldn't catch her breath at all. So Amelia gave her inhaler because she has asthma. My daughter does. And said later, you know, I know that you're not supposed to share a medication,
sure,
but I thought this was kind of life and death. And so she gave the girl the inhaler, which gave her a little bit of time, ran out to the road, flagged down a car, and they called 911. And the girl made it to the ER and did survive, but she was in the middle of an anaphylactic shock.
Sure, it sounded that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we know?
But I was so proud of my daughter.
Do you, I'll bet you were.
Yeah, I really was.
Great story. And, do you know why this happened? The anaphylactic shock? Was she stung, or do you have any sense of that?
No, they never. You know, we talked to her parents after that, and they never ascertained what really was the problem. She wasn't stung, and she didn't have poison ivy or a rash like that. They thought it was something. She might have had a peanut allergy, and she may have eaten something earlier, you know, before they went out to practice, like a granola bar with nuts in it or something.
Right.
But, my daughter was very shy about this and didn't think of it as a big deal, but we thought it was terrific.
You bet. Was terrific. Thank you, Erin. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan. Right. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Bob in Shelburne, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on.
Hi, Alan. This is back in 2008. I worked for a major communications company, and I was called out late at night around 10 or 11 o'clock during the middle of a snowstorm to go take a wire out of the road. And I got up to the location. I got the wire out. Police let the people go. This was snowing quite a bit. There was already probably a foot and a half on the ground.
Yeah.
And it was probably around 11:30 at night. And as I turned and left the area to go home, I saw a young woman walking down the road, covered in snow, like she'd been walking for a mile or more. And and I remembered I had a sister who had passed out in a snowstorm, and she was okay, but all I could think about was this girl was young, about my sister's age at the time that it happened. And I said, well, I gotta just at least see if she needs a ride home. So I turned around, and she's just, you know, drenched and covered in snow and shivering. I says, where are you going? Do you need a lift? And because all I could envision was her just freezing to death. So she was willing to get in my car, and she was probably about 15 or 16, and I just took her up the road another mile and a half and dropped her at her house. So nothing too outstanding, just came to my mind when you're asking about this. I don't feel like a hero. I just felt like I did somebody a favor.
Well, you know, they always say in the paper when somebody does something extraordinary, the hero always says, you know, I'm no hero. Anybody would have done this wrong. You know, I mean, wrong.
Yeah.
Some people do it. Some people don't do it. Hey, Bob, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Sure.
Okay. Yep. Bill on Facebook says, Alan, please tell people they find a baby alone on a road, regardless of what happens. They after they return the baby, they must call Child Protective Service. Okay. And returning child to a neglectful family was well-intentioned, but sometimes real heroism requires you to think more deeply about the situation and find appropriate resources. Thanks for a great show. I hope you'll do it again. Renee on Facebook says, I've stopped traffic to save many a turtle. Okay, you can check in on WMC's Facebook page, facebook.com/WMCRadio. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Mike of Worcester and Mark of Stone Ridge and Ray of Clifton Park and Greg of Altamont.
Support comes from MySci, Museum of Innovation and Science, formerly the Schenectady Museum, presenting Tis the Season Holiday Planetarium Show, Thursdays through Sundays, and the Model Trains Run, 12 to 3 p.m. weekends, starting December 8th. MISCI.org. Baba Louie's Pizza, Pittsfield, Great Barrington, and Hudson, New York. Natural wood-fired pizzas, salads, vegan soups, sandwiches, pasta dishes, and gluten-free options. BabaLouie's.com. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Greater Capital Region, Glens Falls, Saratoga, and the Berkshires. InterimHealthcare.com. And Reed Media, tools for colleges and high schools to publish student achievements online in print and in social media. ReedMedia.com.
Apologies from Alan. I gave out the main office number, the other number, not the 1-800-348-2551 number, which is our Vox Pop number. I've heard Joe do it during our fun drives and the rest of it. We do it all the time, but I am so sorry. And again, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Mike in Worcester. Okay, Mike, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Mike, go.
Okay, it's a pleasure to talk with you.
And
this
to you.
Happened about 30 years ago. I was a young man then. I'm 57 now. I was working in the city of Worcester at the time.
By the way, you're still a young man. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much. And my brother and my wife were working at the same company downtown in Worcester at the time, and I had to pick them up. I was parked at a parking garage on the top floor on the roof, which was six floors high, and my car broke down on the fifth floor coming down. Wouldn't go. So I went down the elevator with my brother and my wife at the time to make a phone call to my other brother to come get us. And coming off the elevator, a young man was getting in and he asked me a question. He said, does this elevator go to the fifth floor? And I said, yes, it goes all the way to the roof. Why? He said, because I'm going to jump. Now, you see a lot of things when you work downtown for a while, a lot of characters, and I really didn't take it seriously. So that's why this isn't really a hero story. I was very callous. I just said, well, please, you know, just give me a couple of seconds so you don't land on my car roof. That's real smarty. That's a smart kid. But I felt, well, you know, he may be, I didn't believe he would jump, but I thought he may be bothering people there. So I figured I would alert the parking attendant, which I told him. And he buzzed the security. The security was a young kid. He was probably about 22, 23 at the time. And as he did that, because I was near the entrance, I looked, and there he was on the fifth floor with one leg hanging over.
Oh, my God.
So the young kid, he got on the elevator. We didn't have any time to discuss. I flew up the stairway. And I got to the fifth floor expecting to find the young kid. And the guy was hanging over. And I shouted, stop. And he did. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to jump. And I said, well, don't. And I couldn't think of anything to say, honest to God. And all I had in my hand was my briefcase. So I said, you have to see what's in my briefcase before you do this. And I slid the thing hard across the floor of the parking garage, close to him, and started moving towards it. And he said, don't come any closer. He said, but I have to show you what's in the briefcase. I have to open it, and it will change your mind. Now, in the meantime, the young kid, he had gone to the roof, thinking if you're going to jump, you're going to go to the roof, which suicide is probably never a logical option. But he had started sliding down the back wall behind the kid on the ramp. So the best I could do was really to keep his attention and keep him talking. So as I moved towards him and towards the briefcase to open, telling him all the time that there was something wonderful in there that was going to change his life and change his mind, the kid kept getting closer. At the last second, as the kid got closer to the jumper, I don't know if I'd given it away with my eyes or if he had heard the kid's feet moving, he jumped.
Oh, my God.
And the kid was close enough to him that he raked his hand towards him, happened to get his hand hooked into the guy's belt as he was going over.
Wow.
And reeled him back into the garage. Now, at this time, they had called the police. The police were showing up. I got my arm on the kid, brought him down the elevator, talking to him. And his story was that he had lost his job. He had lost his house. He had a young wife, a young daughter. They were now in shelter. He had not eaten for 3 days. And he figured they would be better off without him.
Quite.
And to this day, I've never told this to anybody, but to this day, I don't feel a hero. I just am amazed at the callousness of, you know, and it's a normal thing. To not, when you see something so extraordinary or hear something like this, it's so easy not to do anything or not to believe it. I somewhat understand the picture taker to that regard because it's so much out of your frame of reference.
Sure.
Then you work within your frame of reference and that person who's doing the deed or in that situation is not.
Well, you know, the picture taker was on the other side of the platform, you know, way back. But there were people who were closer to the guy. Part of my repulsion for the whole thing is that he was taking the picture in the first place. I mean, you know, there's some sensitivity in this world, and it's his 15 minutes of fame, and he's been on all these shows, and he's defending himself. But it's really the real thing is you were a hero that day, and
I don't believe that.
Yeah, well, you are. Okay, Mike. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Yep. Let's go to Mark in Stone Ridge. Mark in Stone Ridge, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Okay. This was happened about 10 years ago when I was on the Shokan Reservoir trolling for trout with another guy in another boat, and I handed him a walkie-talkie. And we were just out there trying to locate fish. They're not easy to catch. And I was a little further out, and I saw a strange shape out in the water, and I couldn't make out what it was. And we were both half a mile apart. And usually what happens when we find where the fish are, then we call the other guy, and we row over and fish in the same spot. Well, I see this strange shape, so I said, well, let me head for it. And it was a beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky, but windy. So I get closer and closer, and I see it's a boat tumbling in the water. And as I get closer, I see there's two guys. And they're panicked in this boat. So I call my other friend. I said, get over here. These guys are in trouble. So this whole thing took 2 hours to rescue them. But when I got close to them, I always heard people say the fear of death in someone. Well, when I got up to this boat, these guys were so terrified, so cold, that I was worried getting too close to them. They might do something crazy.
Yeah, they might bring you down with them. But Mark, I wanted to ask you something. So their boat, just to get the story right, their boat was already capsized.
Right. It was tumbling out in the water, and I could see from like a half a mile away. I couldn't figure out what it was. It was such a strange shape because it kept rolling over on itself.
I got it.
Because they were in there panicked. Yep. So when I got close enough and I saw how, you know, they're wide eyes and they just, you know, they didn't say anything. They were just wide eyed and cold. So I threw them. I said, you can't come near the boat until you put on these life preservers. So I throw the two that I had in my boat. They put them on, and then I started backing in towards them. And I got a hold of one. He had the back of the boat. I said, I'll take you one at a time. And Jeff, my other friend, Jeff Stokes, was coming closer. He was about a quarter mile away. And I was going to pull the guy in, and these two guys were from New York City. One was a doctor. The other one was a financial broker. They were kind of heavy in the middle and very thin arms, and I'm going to pull him in, and I can actually feel his arms. I just can't get him over the boat. I almost feel them pulling out. So I told him, you have to help me. You'll have to stand on your boat, stabilize it, and get in. Well, both got in, and then I knew I couldn't take the other one. The boat was just, and Jeff got there, and he got the other guy in his boat, and then we slowly got to shore, and, you know, it was a lifesaver, because their tackle boxes opened up, and they were, you know, these hooks were stuck in them, and they didn't even feel it.
Did you ever hear from them after the case?
Yes, that's a good part of the story. I know his name was Morty. That's all I can remember. But months later, I found a note under my boat at the reservoir and a magnum of wine. So he was so thankful because, you know, if we weren't their angels that day, I don't know what would have happened to him. They were really terrified. And but I want to tell you, my hero, I heard about 5 years ago or more, I heard about a gentleman that in the subway, another gentleman fell
right
on the tracks and was floundering down there.
Yeah, I talked about that already. I did, yes.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
And he jumped on him and held him down as the train
over. I remember that.
Now,
that
guy is my hero. I wish I could shake his hand because I never felt like my life was threatened.
Yeah, yeah.
But this guy, that's a hero.
Yeah, no, that was a hero. That was so special. And then there was another one who just pulled somebody up. And then there was the other guy who lay down in the middle of the tracks, and they survived. Can you believe that? That's a great reminder, Mark. Terrific story. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to Ray in Clifton Park. Ray in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Oh, how are you?
Pretty good.
I have a story which is about both heroics and it has an anecdote attached to it, which is quite interesting. It's not me. It's my very best friend. She's too shy to tell this story. I was working at a homeless shelter in the Capital District, maybe a year ago, and my best friend happened to be the kitchen manager, the chef. One of our guests went into cardiac arrest. Somebody yelled, "Does anybody know CPR?" She came running out of the kitchen and started doing compressions. And the guy was in real distress. His color was bad. Everything was.
The guy was on his front or his back?
He was on his back.
Yeah, okay.
And staff started gathering around and saying, Is there anything we can do to help? And she's keeping the repetitions of the compressions going, whips around, looks at one of the staff and says, "Go flip the pork chops," because she was in the middle of preparing lunch. And she had pork chops on the grill.
Wow.
"Go flip the," without missing a beat, and we're right back to doing compressions. So she not only saved this guy's life, she saved lunch.
She saved the pork chops. Yeah.
Get the pork chops.
How did she feel about doing that? Is she there with you now?
No, I'm actually going to meet her in a few minutes. Yeah. But, she said, "Listen, it was in God's hands. I had nothing. All I did was, what I knew how to do."
Yeah.
And, that was it. The idea of being heroic never entered her mind.
Amazing.
It was just one of those. But the way she thinks, it was automatic. Like, you save the guy, save the pork chops.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Ray. Appreciate it very much. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Greg in Altamont. Greg, you're on.
Thanks, Alan.
Sure.
My life has been saved by two good Samaritans on two different occasions. As a young man of about 12 or 13, I was going down to the corner store with a friend of mine. We got a cold drink in the summertime, and we lived in a neighborhood where the freight yard was down the pike from us a little bit, and we were walking back on the railroad tracks from the corner store, foolishly in the middle of the rails.
Of course.
And in those days when they used to manual switch the trains, the train slowed down considerably before it came to the switch.
Right.
And we were lucky for that. But because the train was running unloaded, and it was one of those summer nights where sound was sort of dead, maybe the right humidity or the right atmospheric conditions, we didn't hear a train. Nor did we feel any vibration, and what we heard was a little toot toot on a whistle that the conductor in the caboose let out the notes of. And when we turned around after hearing the sound, the train was about 15 feet behind us. And so if he hadn't tooted, I think we probably would have
saved your life.
Yeah, because standing in the middle of the rails, we would have been run over by the train. I don't know that we would have reacted soon enough to get out of the way.
Greg, I wish I could give you more time. What's happening here is that we have four people up on the board. I want to try to get everybody. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bye. Let's go to Roberto in Kerhonkson. Okay, Roberto, you're on.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good.
Good. I'll give you a two-part story real quick. I agree with the fireman that called earlier, and we should definitely have more training in this sort of, yeah, but, you know, humans, I think, naturally will, like you, all the callers that you have given you their story, and some way or another, they will react at some point to help. But in the case of the MTA,
yep.
And scenario in the platform, and like the firemen said, you know, we're not used to coping or dealing with this kind of stuff. Look, in a perfect world, if we had a little fire station in every
sure.
fireman station, you know, people on the platform that know.
Okay, Roberto, what happened? Tell us the story.
What happened is that in 2005, I was taking the train from Manhattan to Queens, where I live,
yep.
And there was a woman being attacked by a homeless guy.
Oh my God.
And everybody was just saying, stop, stop. Nobody was doing anything. I went to get the conductor. I said, please help, this woman being attacked. He came into the car. He looked to the left. He looked to the right. Everybody was pointing at the guy attacking the woman who had stepped off from attacking her at that point. The woman was terrified, and the guy looked to the right, the conductor to the left, left the train, and I followed him. I said, are you going to do something? He said, I do nothing. The police deals with that. I said, are you going to call the police? I said, I do nothing. Police takes care of that.
It's not my, my job.
Not my job. Yeah. I pulled the emergency cord, Alan, and that train stopped. I alerted the police at that point, right?
Yeah.
So they come. They have a meeting with the conductor. They arrest me. 10 months I have to get off two felonies. I was charged with two felonies.
Because you stopped the train.
Because the conductor accused me of beating him and assaulting him.
That's absurd.
We went to trial.
Yeah.
I won.
Yeah.
I won my trial. The two women, the woman that was being attacked and another woman, were my witnesses.
Wow.
The bigger picture is that I do commend the photographer. He's a photographer. He did his job. Even if it's for fame or not, it got put on the paper.
Okay, that's the
New York subway is going into the New York subway is playing Russian roulette.
Yeah. Okay, and that's a very good point, Roberto. I wish I could give you more time. I cannot because I wanted to try to get to everybody. But, you know, you're right. He took the picture, and now there were pictures in the paper how everybody is hugging the wall right now. So maybe taking the photograph saved some people. Thank you, Roberto. Let's go to Dan in Saratoga real fast, Dan. We only have seconds.
Oh, Alan?
Yes, got to be real fast. We only have seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is maybe too long, but this is about 20 years ago. I was riding my bike to work in Chicago, parallel to Lakeshore Drive, and got to an intersection and heard a crash on Lakeshore just above me, about 15 feet above me where the highway surface was.
Okay.
Looked up and saw a station wagon coming through the air, rolling through the air, and so it came to the ground. I ran up to the road. And what had happened was a woman coming northbound had jumped the median in a Cadillac and had hit this car more or less head-on and sent it airborne. And so then she continued on and hit five or six more cars.
Yeah.
So the whole southbound rush hour traffic was a mess.
What did you
do? So I ran up to the station wagon, went into the, it was upside down, went into the passenger side window.
Yep.
The driver was suspended from his seatbelt upside down.
Yep.
Bleeding profusely, really broken up, really messed up.
Right.
And so we had kind of a committee around the car
yep.
to figure out what to do with the guy. We couldn't get the seatbelt off. And so someone handed me a buck knife. And I laid there with the buck knife. And they said, well, don't cut him down right away because he's so injured you don't want to move him.
Yep.
And another fellow was trying to staunch his neck from bleeding.
We're out of time, but go ahead. Finish it up.
So anyway, so the EMS showed up and fortunately got the guy out of the car. But as I walked away from the car, I noticed a cigarette butt on the ground and the gas.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And someone had just tossed their cigarette butt just near the gas.
Naturally. Okay, listen, Dan, I'm so sorry. I would love to have given you more time, but we just are out of time. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Yeah. And Andy in Kingston, one word. That's all you get. Your entire family was saved. How?
We came into a cloud from somebody's blown engine. We were traveling south on 9W. At highway speeds.
Okay, and, you only got a second. Go ahead.
All right, I looked in the rearview mirror. There's a Sears van stopped behind us, and then I turn around and I look at the guy who thankfully stopped behind us, but he was hit hard from behind, and replacing him in my rearview mirror was another small car. I run over to the guy who had gone through a brick wall. As soon as he sees me, he says, "Is your family okay?"
Yeah.
He had cranked the wheel hard to the left when he realized he was going to get hit.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow.
Save our family.
Okay, Andy, I wish I could give you more time. I cannot. I am so sorry. We are out of time. Thanks, everybody who called in, and I apologize to those who were left on the line. Andy and another guy named Andy. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, CurranCompliance.com, and College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com, the office of Vivian Letizia, Woodstock Orthodontic, Cosmetic, and General Dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, WoodstockDentist.com. Thanks again for joining us, everybody, on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Christy Carton. Our producer's Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok, stepping in for Ray Graff. Moyers and Company tomorrow on Medical Monday. Next week, Dr. Mark Pettis. Stay tuned now for a news update on what a wonderful show this was and how inspiring so many of you are. Really appreciate it.